Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Lynn Wilson. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology, specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Wilson is a professor of therapeutic radiology and an expert in the use of radiation to treat lung cancers and cutaneous lymphomas. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This week, the doctors are joined by Lou Friedman and Scott Capoza, two physical therapists who specialize in working with cancer patients. Here's Francine Foss.
Can you start off by telling us a little bit about what lymphedema is?
Sure, I'd be happy to tackle that one. It really is an accumulation of fluid in a body part where it doesn't belong. Often with cancer patients, it happens when lymph nodes are removed. The lymphatic system helps to drain fluid out of a limb, say, back to the heart, and if lymph nodes are taken out, that pathway can become blocked up. And fluid that would normally drain back to the heart can accumulate in an arm or leg or other body parts.
So the lymph node system is really different than the arteries and the veins?
It's complementary, but it's different. It's a third system. The arteries bring fluid from the heart to the extremities or outward, and there's two systems for returning it. One is the venous system or the veins, and the second is the lymphatic system. The lymphatic system is by design to get the bigger molecules out, some of the waste products, bigger proteins, and things other than fluid that the veins will not bring back to the heart.
Tell us about your backgrounds. How did you each become interested in this field?
I've been a physical therapist for 27 years, really started out doing orthopedics and musculoskeletal problems. And probably about 10 or 12 years ago, I took a class in lymphedema and enjoyed it and started doing more work in that area. And then what happens is you develop, you bring on more cases, things that aren't related to lymphedema but might be related to oncology. So, say, working with people after mastectomy, shoulder problems, and really one thing leads to another. And I was actually quite drawn to the area and just seemed to do more and more with it and really enjoyed it. And the opportunity came up recently to work full-time over at the Smilow Cancer Center in doing outpatient, and I jumped at the chance.
And Scott, how about yourself?
I've been a physical therapist for about 12 years now, and I'm also a 12-year cancer survivor. I've been mostly in pediatric physical therapy, but like Lou, I've started to take some courses in oncology rehab, and it was in the summer of 2006 when the CT Challenge Survivorship Clinic was going to be opening initially over at Howard Ave, and now it's in Smilow. And the medical director at that time, Dr. Ken Miller, approached me and said, I want a physical therapist to be on staff as part of the clinic, and I jumped at the opportunity because I thought that it would be a good challenge and a good way to, you know, take my professional skills and my personal experience and be able to help fellow cancer survivors. So I got involved with the Survivorship Center, and I've been doing that ever since.
So is it unusual for a cancer hospital to actually have their own physical therapist?
No, I wouldn't say so. I think that, you know, some of the larger cancer hospitals do have rehab, the rehab component to it, you know, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and even speech therapy, depending on, you know, what the needs of the patient are.
When we talk about lymphedema, which is the topic of our show today, do we need to be concerned about lymphedema in any situation where a lymph node is removed, or is it only in the context of breast cancer and the breast cancer surgeries that we actually see this problem?
Well, it's a great question. It's a broad question. And, you know, it brings us up to who's at risk for lymphedema. And honestly, having a lymph node or a couple of lymph nodes removed does not put a person at high risk for developing lymphedema. It's when someone has, you know, multiple lymph nodes removed, and this perhaps is combined with radiation, they may be at higher risk. And this can happen in breast cancer if the lymph nodes are removed from the armpit. It could happen in the leg if lymph nodes are removed from the pelvic area. Even folks with head and neck cancer, if they have a neck dissection, can develop lymphedema of the head and neck area. So Yeah, I mean, it really depends on each person is an individual. You know, even in the worst case scenario, you know, the statistics might be 30 to 40% of patients would develop it. And I tend to be positive and say, well, that means 70% will not develop it. And I tend to switch it around that way for patients because many patients are concerned about that now. They talk about that and they're actually fearful of having that as one of their it's almost like they hesitate having surgery for breast cancer because they're afraid of getting lymphedema, and that certainly should not be the case.
And Scott, do you see lymphedema in the setting of pediatric cancers as well?
I haven't seen it too prevalent in pediatric cancers, as Lou was referring to. I think you see it more in the breast cancer population, sometimes ovarian cancer or prostate cancer.
The process of working with a patient, if we know that they're going to have surgery plus radiotherapy and we're concerned that they're going to be at relatively high risk for lymphedema, do you start actually working with the patient prior to these procedures, in the midst of the cancer treatment program, afterwards? When do you really like to get involved? When do you think it's most beneficial?
Well, it's, again, that's a broad question, and it depends on, I think, the clinic, the hospital. There are some advantages to even doing preoperative assessments because it gives you your best baseline for if someone is going to have a problem, you have that baseline measurement. Mostly what we do in our outpatient physical therapy clinic is we are working with patients during the course of their treatment. They're having perhaps having radiotherapy, they're having chemo treatments at the same time.
I imagine then there's some significant limitations to what you can do with those patients if they're fatigued from their chemotherapy or they have other side effects to deal with.
It certainly, you have to be creative, and it is a little bit of a challenge. Fatigue is certainly an issue. If it's after surgery, pain is an issue. And it's that right amount of aggressiveness between regaining function and not doing something that would disrupt, say, a surgical site or make them worse as a result of being recently having had surgery.
What are some of the other functional problems that you've seen? Obviously, we've talked a little bit about lymphedema, but what other sorts of things are you involved with helping patients get better from?
Well, as Lou was referring to, I think cancer-related fatigue is one of the primary side effects from cancer treatments, and one of the things that that I think we both try to educate our patients on is that cancer-related fatigue is something that can last for months and sometimes even years after treatment is over. I think a lot of cancer patients will think that, oh, well, I finished chemotherapy 3 months ago, and so I should be feeling better right away. And that's not necessarily the case because, you know, the treatments are so powerful and so toxic to the system that it takes a long time to get all that out of your system. So for us, you know, I think a big part of it is education about fatigue and energy conservation as we, you know, move patients forward. And to, again, educate them that it's not going to happen, you know, right off the bat. It's something that can linger for months and years.
So there's the issue of overall fatigue, but also there's the issue of actual muscle weakness, which we sometimes see, particularly in patients getting a lot of steroids as part of their therapy. How do you distinguish between those two, and do you have a different way of approaching those two?
I would almost say, too, that even a bigger issue, not to switch, but one of the bigger issues has to do with almost apprehension of movement. Being afraid to regain function, being afraid to move, and as a result of that, getting muscle weakness from an activity. I think one of the biggest things that we can do is educate the patient that, no, it is okay to move. Here's some certain guidelines to use so that you know you're going to, you know, regain your strength and function, but not overdo it. I really think that is probably one of the biggest things that we do in physical therapy.
And to that point, I think that that's a very important point that, you know, physical therapists and occupational therapists as well, you know, the rehab team, they're very important to help patients, you know, kind of bridge that gap of, you know, I don't want to move, but really you do need to move. And you don't want to just cut your patients loose and just say, okay, go exercise in a gym. You want them to work with a rehab professional to maybe give them some home exercise programs or something like that to build up their strength and, you know, work on posture and those types of things before they then go out into the rest of the world.
I think another issue is that patients actually perceive the weakness and fatigue and almost feel like they can't get over that hump sometimes. So, and I know you probably see that a lot. So yeah. How do you actually deal with that?
I think it's a really good question, and I think it has to do with graded exercise and small bits and pieces. And I like to give feedback and say, look, you know, let's just take an example of doing a single, like an arm curl as an exercise, just for the sake of an example, and say, here's 2 pounds and you did 4 repetitions. Okay. And next time in, okay, there's 2 pounds, but you did 6 repetitions and that's an improvement. And really track it so that the person can see those little gains adding up over time.
And one of the things that I like to do is, you know, we talk about having people exercise, you know, as a gold standard, 30 minutes, 5 times a week. And a lot of people aren't ready for that when they're right out of treatment. And so likewise, I'll break it down as well and say, okay, well, instead of doing 30 minutes all in one shot, maybe do 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes in the afternoon and 10 minutes in the evening if you can. You know, or even just do 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes in the afternoon, and that's a start. And like Lou said, then you build upon that. So rather than having it be this big thing that can be overwhelming for patients, you break it down and you make it a little bit more attainable.
Generally, how often do you meet with patients, and how long is a patient in the program on average?
Well, I think that's going to be different for Scott as well as myself. The outpatient physical therapy, we will see people anywhere from 1 to 5 times a week, and it really depends. If we have a real significant case of lymphedema, that person can be seen 5 times a week. If it's someone where we're trying to make sure they regain mobility and function, but maybe they're just, they haven't had surgery all that long ago, I might just see that person 1 time a week, send them off to do some home exercises, and then monitor them and then upgrade the program. So, and I think Scott will probably have a different answer for the survivorship.
Yeah, for the survivorship clinic, for the CT Challenge Survivorship Clinic, we typically see people for 3 visits that are spaced out 2 months apart. So a survivor will come in for an initial visit, and then we'll have them come in for a 2-month follow-up and then for a 4-month follow-up, so that way we can follow them along and see how their progress is coming.
So Lou and Scott, I'm interested in knowing exactly what happens at a physical therapy appointment. A lot of people think about physical therapy just being exercise, but I know you use a number of modalities, like ultrasound and heat and a lot of other things as well. Could you just take us through some of the things that you do and what a typical appointment would be like?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
Well, sure. I mean, I can tell you from the survivorship clinic, I do range of motion screenings and strength screenings, balance screenings. And then if somebody needs a home exercise program, I'll give them a home exercise program. And if somebody does have lymphedema, then I'll refer them to Lou. You know, or if they need some more intensive hands-on treatments, then I'll refer them on to Lou.
So the outpatient physical therapy clinic is a little different, but basically all our treatments are based upon our initial assessment. So we try to individualize each treatment based on each patient's individual needs. So we will assess whether it be range of motion and strength. If it person's coming in for lymphedema, we have a infrared scanner that we get limb volume and girth measurements, and again assess the lymphedema through our hands, whether it's soft or pitting. And really, it will depend. So if we're working with someone for range of motion, say after mastectomy, it's going to be a combination of doing some hands-on care to stretch out the soft tissue, maybe mobilizing a joint, doing some exercise with them. And we're very big into education and home exercise and patient responsibility.
We're going to take a short break for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to learn more information about physical therapy for cancer patients with Lou Friedman and Scott Capoza.
It's estimated that nearly 200,000 men in the U.S. will be diagnosed with prostate cancer this year, and over 2,000 new cases will be diagnosed in Connecticut alone. 1 in 6 American men will develop prostate cancer in the course of his lifetime. Major advances in the detection and treatment of prostate cancer have dramatically decreased the number of men who die from this disease. Screening for prostate cancer can be performed quickly and easily in a physician's office using 2 simple tests, a physical exam and a blood test. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers like the one at Yale to test innovative new treatments for prostate cancer. The Da Vinci robotic surgical system is an option available for patients at Yale that uses 3-dimensional imaging to enable the surgeon to perform a prostatectomy without the need for a large incision. This has been a Medical Minute, and more information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Lynn Wilson, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Francine Foss. Today, we're joined by Lou Friedman and Scott Capoza, and we're discussing physical therapy in cancer patients. Gentlemen, tell us a little bit about exercises that might help reduce the effects of lymphedema, say, in a breast cancer patient.
So I'll start with that one. That really depends on where we intervene with the patient first, and it will depend on the severity of the lymphedema. Early on, even almost immediately postoperative, we want the person to do some deep breathing exercises, make sure they have a good posture, not to get caught into a kind of a slumped posture, a protected posture. Even muscle pumping activities of muscles away from the surgical site. The last thing we want to do is disrupt the surgical site, or if they have a drain in, to disrupt that. But we do want the body moving. Later on, there are certainly you want, it helps to regain motion and strength and get the muscles moving. There was a big, I guess almost a fear of doing weight training at one point, and all the recent studies have shown that weight training is, not only will it not increase lymphedema if done correctly, but it will help reduce lymphedema. The big thing there is to guide the patient on how to do it correctly, you know, starting at a low level, progressing slowly. If you have someone with more severe lymphedema, that really is an individual case-by-case basis that has to be done with the use of compression and things along that line. So that's going to be a more individual basis.
So on that note, can you talk a little bit about the lymphedema sleeve?
Certainly. A lymphedema sleeve is a form of compression, and compression is very important in the treatment of lymphedema. And there is many different types of compression. Basically, a lymphedema sleeve is something that you pull on. It's like a thick stocking. It should be used, if we're talking about something for the arm, it should be used with a glove or a gauntlet and not alone. It really depends on the goal of compression. If you're trying to reduce lymphedema, there's actually better ways to do it than a sleeve, which we use short stretch bandaging and other types of materials in conjunction with a hands-on treatment. The best use of a sleeve is either in prevention, if someone does not have lymphedema and you're trying to prevent it, let's say they're going to go on air travel, or if after you're done with your treatment, you've reduced the swelling and you want to use something to maintain it, the sleeve is a wonderful way to do it. Basically, what it does is it squeezes the arm and it makes less space for the swelling to accumulate.
That's interesting, Lou, that you made the mention about it shouldn't be used alone, a sleeve. I've seen lots of patients who have a sleeve on, and it's pretty effective at eliminating lymphedema in the arm itself, and then they have a gigantic hand at the end of that sleeve.
Because it's all based on pressure gradients. The idea is at the, let's say down at the wrist, you're going to have more pressure, and up at the upper part of the arm, you'll have less pressure. So the fluid is going to follow that pressure gradient. The problem is if you're squeezing at the wrist, the hand has less pressure as well, so the fluid can tend to accumulate there. And unfortunately, I've seen a lot of that as well. People come into the clinic and say, I've got this beautiful sleeve, and I'll say, where's the glove? And I don't have a glove. So that's the first thing we try to do is to get them to go out and get a glove or a gauntlet.
So Lou, are these sleeves custom made for the individual patient?
They can be, but there's also what we call off-the-shelf sleeves. If you know, fit a certain size, they can be off-the-shelf. If the limb is misshapen in any way, you have to go custom. And there's also different types of materials to use in a sleeve. And if you want to go with a certain type of material, which is like a flat knit, that's going to be a custom garment.
And can women start the process of dealing with their lymphedema during the course of their chemotherapy after their breast cancer surgery, or do they have to wait until the chemotherapy is done?
They can start right away. And sometimes it gets a little complicated with chemotherapy because that will affect the fluid balance in the body. And sometimes it's confusing as to, you know, is the swelling related to the chemotherapy? Is the swelling related to the lymphedema? But we just try to sort that through as best we can.
Scott, have you noticed in your practice patients deriving just general benefits from physical therapy? Obviously, they may have a specific problem. You're seeing them, helping them with that. But just having patients get a sense of improvement and getting closer back to their normal life baseline, do you feel that the program is helpful in general and has other benefits aside from the very specific problem you might be focusing on?
Definitely. What I get to see patients at the Survivorship Center, at the Survivorship Clinic, really, it's kind of the gamut. And, as Lou was saying, it's very individualized. One person will come in, like a breast cancer survivor will come in and, she'll have a certain set of questions and needs. And then, a gentleman who's a colon cancer survivor will come in and he has another set of concerns and questions. And so to be able to be there and work with them to give them exercises to do at home. And again, I think the biggest piece that we do is education. And so to be able to have that education piece there for patients is really critical. And then on top of that, not just myself, but the whole clinic is also staffed by a medical director, a dietitian, and a social worker. And so when a survivor comes into the survivorship clinic, they see all four professionals. And so they leave with a lot of information, not just from physical therapy, but from those other realms as well, because as we all know, that survivorship is such a broad topic and it hits on so many things. So,
Scott, do you speak with the physician, with the medical oncologist prior to seeing a patient in the survivorship clinic? Or do you already know what the issues are for that patient, or do you assess them first and then meet as a group?
We get the records ahead of time. So our staff meets 1 hour prior to clinic starting, and we go over everybody's medical records so that we have a general sense. And so it gives each of us a good idea of what questions we need to ask. It helps us target those particular questions that we need to ask. And then once that initial visit is over, again, if they need additional follow-up, for example, a breast cancer survivor comes in and needs a sleeve or needs lymphedema treatment, then I refer them to Lou. If somebody needs to have more labs done or needs to meet with a cardiologist, then our medical director will makes that referral. So basically, whatever referrals need to be made from then on out can be controlled through the survivorship clinic.
And Lou, how often do you actually interact with the medical oncologist when you're treating a woman with, say, breast cancer?
I think it varies on a case-by-case basis. One of the things we do is we can, if the person isn't seeing the oncologist on a frequent basis, we can almost act as an extension of their eyes and ears. In other words, if things are going along well, they don't hear from us. If, in fact, we're having issues that we see something that doesn't sit well with us, then we contact them immediately or someone in that office and ask their opinion and do they need to see the person.
Scott, the Connecticut Challenge Survivorship Clinic is obviously a special opportunity for patients, an important part of our Yale Cancer Program. Tell us a little, you mentioned it in the beginning, but give us some more details about how it first started and its background. And there's a second part of that. Tell us what a typical visit is like for a patient when they hit the door. Who do they see and what's it like?
Sure. So the CT Challenge Survivorship Clinic was founded in October of 2006. And it really was the idea of a local survivor named Jeff Keith, who is a childhood cancer survivor who was treated at Dana-Farber.